kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the automat. Men grow cold as girls grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Tonight, all Broadway theaters will honor Carol Channing, who died yesterday at the age of 97, by dimming their marquee lights. Her performances as the gold-digging Lorelei Lee in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and the matchmaker Dolly Gallagher Levi in Hello, Dolly! Made her a Broadway legend. In 2003, Carol Channing joined me for an hour in this very studio here at WAMC for an episode of our afternoon call-in program, Vox Pop. Her book, Just Lucky, I Guess, a memoir of sorts, had come out a few months prior, and she was en route to an event at Bennington College, her alma mater in Bennington, Vermont. In memoriam, we share that program now. Carol Channing is one of the biggest stars on Broadway. She has had not one, but two groundbreaking roles. First, of course, she played Lorelei Lee in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and became forever linked with the song Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. It was such an amazing role and performance that Time magazine put her on the cover. Then, just a few years later, in 1964, she won a Tony Award for her role as Dolly in Hello, Dolly! It is a role that she has performed over 4,500 times. And don't forget her film roles. She was nominated for an Academy Award for her role in the film Thoroughly Modern Millie. She most recently just came out with her autobiography, Just Lucky, I Guess, which its subtitle is A Memoir of Sorts. It is a wonderful thrill to welcome Carol Channing to Vox Pop.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
What? Joe. It's just great to have you here.
Joe Donahue.
Yes.
Yes.
You can just talk a little bit closer to the microphone so we can
get
you.
Okay. There.
There you go.
Okay, WAMC, it says Northeast Public Radio. Isn't that marvelous?
Well, it is.
Yes.
And it's great to have you on our airwaves. So, first of all, congratulations are in order. You're engaged.
Yes.
Well,
Isn't that marvelous?
Yes.
I can't wait. Now,
this is an amazing story, and it all came out of your memoir.
Yeah,
right.
It did indeed. Page 15, I started talking. You know, every woman has a first love. So, and you never forget it. Most women don't. And I don't know how men are. I'll have to ask you. But the women never forget their first love. And here was this. These things there.
Yeah, you can take them off. And then
that's fine.
Yeah.
And so I wrote about him thinking naturally he's a year older than I am. I wanted to call this book The First 80 Years Are the Hardest. But Mr. Corder said no. Michael Corder, he's
the editor at Simon & Schuster.
The great editor-in-chief of Simon & Schuster.
So he liked Memoir of Sorts.
He liked A Memoir of Sorts. But it really is the first 80 years. And people should take heart. It's all over after the first 80 years.
So now, here, your first love that you write about on page 15.
They tell me it's 15.
Yeah, 15.
I thought, well, I'm free to talk about him because he can't be still with us.
He was the leader of the school band.
Yes, yeah. Oh, you read the book.
I did.
Oh, you dear.
That's a wonderful book that you wrote, by the way. You wrote the book. I mean,
every word. And no edits. That's more than Gore Vidal can get. I mean, no edits. I was crying on the phone and saying, your editing department, why don't they write their own book? You know, and they changed every sentence. They cut the punchlines. They had no sense of humor, nothing. Oh, it was terrible. I mean, I said something about Barbara Streisand in Hello, Dolly! In the movie.
Yes.
A barrel of the left, she ain't. She's our great, great musical force of the last century, but a barrel of the left, she ain't. And they changed it to isn't.
Oh.
I mean, these people. So I was miserable. And then Mr. Corder said, well, Carol, you can't expect us to do this, to print the book with absolutely no edits. And I said, no, just a sense of humor. That's all. I need guidance. And you know he printed it with no edits? None.
Oh, that's great.
The first galleys that came through had on it, Mr. Corder, dear, what's the plural of solar plexus? Is it plexuses? Or is it plexi? It's not in the dictionary. And they left it in. They thought, no edits? Okay. And they left all my little side notes in.
That is wonderful.
Yes.
So your husband-to-be read the book.
No. Mervyn, a friend of his that owns these department stores on the West Coast.
Oh, right. Mervyn Suburbs. Sure.
Yes, you know.
Yes.
Well, he was a dear friend of mine and his wife, Rosalind. And he was reading the book, dropped it flat on the floor, called Harry Collegian, and said, Harry, you're in Carol's book. And he said, really? And Harry appeared at my front gate. He was in Rancho Mirage, California. And we started talking from where we left off at 15 and 16. We met at 12 and 13. He was the leader of the school band, and I wanted to run for vice president. Well, now I'm off on that. But and so the band, and I went to Harry. I had to make friends with him, and I thought, well, I guess he's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my whole life. And he's Armenian,
mm-hmm.
and he looks like he's straight from the Holy Land. You know, like he's sitting on top of Mount Sinai eating figs and things. And couscous wrapped in vine leaves and all that. We're going to have that at the wedding.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. So when is the wedding?
So we just continued talking from where we were at 16.
Well, when is the wedding?
July.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Isn't this sweet?
Oh, there's the ring.
His mother's ring.
That is beautiful.
Yes.
And what is the stone? Is that emerald?
It's an emerald.
That is gorgeous.
Isn't that lovely?
Beautiful. Well, congratulations to both of you.
Oh, thank you very much.
So here you are in Albany on your way to Bennington College tonight. As I mentioned in the introduction, you're no stranger to Bennington. You attended Bennington College.
I certainly did for 2 years.
And why did you go to Bennington? Why did you want to go to the college?
I didn't want to go to any other place. I was dedicated to going to Bennington. I made up my mind I was going to go to Bennington because it was the only college at the time where you could major in the arts. Mm-hmm. There was Reed College in Oregon at the time. What was that? What time was it? 37?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 36, all that. Well, anyway... Bennington had the greatest faculty. They were subsidized much more than Reed College. And I was able to go, and the first person that met us was from the Class of Literature. It was Catherine Hepburn's little sister, Marion.
Really?
Yes. In the Class of Literature, she said. And I thought, oh, she's adorable. There was only one. She had Catherine's teeth, Catherine's vocal cords, her family accent. Nobody else in Harvard had anything like that accent, but the Hepburn family has sustained that accent, and I don't know how come they don't notice they don't sound like anybody else, but they don't notice it. And Marion and Peggy Hepburn was there, so I went out and got a job, and that's why I was only there 2 years, because I got a job. When Mark Blitzstein's No for an Answer, he wrote modern American operas.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Cradle Will Rock, and he wrote wonderful things with messages and all that. And he had one comedy relief song in it, I'm Simply Fraught About You. And I went and auditioned for him, and he enjoyed it, and I loved making him happy. So I just kept doing everybody on Broadway for him. Ethel Merman, Uta Hagen in The Seagull, a speech from The Seagull. Really, who does Uta Hagen? You know?
And, but you do.
Yes, yes. And Gertrude Lawrence, positively, definitely, beyond a trace of doubt, it's unequivocally. We went on and on with the ending because she always loved endings. And she kept them going and going and going. I remember doing them all for Mark Blitzstein, and that was my first job on Broadway.
So I'm guessing that there was never a time in your life where you didn't want to be on stage, where you wanted to be in the theater. Am I right on that?
It happened in the fourth grade, to tell you the truth. Bobby Schmals, I don't think you know him.
I do not.
Well, he was in the fourth grade with me in San Francisco in public school, Commodore Sloat Grammar School,
mm-hmm.
and he nominated me for secretary of the student body. So the procedure was you were to get up on the stage. If someone nominates you, get up on the stage and tell your fellow students why they should vote for you. Well, naturally, I couldn't think of one reason. So then I was an only child, but I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll do what I do best. I'll turn into somebody else. So I did the principal of the school, Miss Berard. She was apparently the forerunner of Julia Childs.
Oh.
Go to the polls and vote for Carol, she said. And then I had the history teacher saying, yeah, come on, go to the polls and vote for Carol. You know, that she was from the Bronx. And then we had, I did the whole faculty. And the students just loved it. And so did the faculty. That's what's strange. Mr. Schwartz, the chemistry teacher. Mr. Schwartz, he blew up the chemistry class on an average of once a term. Well, I did that, and they laughed. And, of course, it was when I exited, it was holy chaos. I won by a landslide. But I didn't. I won by much better once I met Harry Collegian in grammar school, the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. He was the leader of the school band, and we made up a campaign song. I wanted to run for vice president then. So we want Carol, the band would go. We want Carol. When I'm vice president, when I'm vice president, we'll all leave school at 12 o'clock. When I'm vice president, we want Carol. We want Carol. And we kept it up till the whole the whole school auditorium was singing We Want Carol, won by a landslide again.
Well, who wouldn't vote for you?
Well, no, it isn't that. We made such a fuss.
A mockery.
Over it. Yes, yes, yes.
The wonderful Carol Channing is our guest on Vox Pop this afternoon. So your first break was Len Dunier on Broadway. Is that safe to say?
No, Mark Blitzstein.
That was the first. That was your first.
That was the first, and I got a one-sentence encouraging review from Virgil Thompson, the great classical music critic. And he, I'll never forget him. Great, he's great to me. He said, you'll surely hear more about a satirical chanteuse named Carol Channing. That was all, just one sentence. And the rest of the show he loved. And so I'll never forget him.
That's wonderful. When Dunier came?
Len Dunier came after that. Then I went with the Almanacs. Just all over New York, any place they'd have me. The Shriners, the Elks, for the Catholics, I did their bingo games. Mm-hmm. For the Christian Scientists, anyone that would have me.
Wherever there was work, you would go.
That's right. And I did it free, too. But each show, I got better.
Well, Len Dunier led to Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, correct?
Yes, it led to that. Actually, in Len Dunier, it was a review, and I got to do 12 different parts. Mm-hmm. So it was heaven. I got to jump from one character to another. Wonderful things. We dug up the 20s, the first ones to dig up the 20s, and then there was a rage of all kinds of 20s shows. Then Julie Andrews came to this country with... I forget. But anyway, it was a 20s show. Mm-hmm. Everybody followed suit then after that. It was quite a hit. And I had a choice of three different shows. It was unbelievable. Kaufman, George S. Kaufman, was writing, adapting Dulcie to a musical. And he wanted me to play Dulcie. That was Lynn Fontanne's first play in this mm-hmm. country. And we opened in Boston. And the mayor came, and the governor came, and it was a big noise all about Len Dunier. It was a wonderful show. It was like those little little reviews that they have in London on the West End.
Mm-hmm. What is it about when I hear you talk about a role like that, where you have so many characters, and then listening to you talk about in school where you can impersonate your teachers, what is the fascination for you about being someone else?
It's my only talent. I mean, I'm not. I can tap dance a little, but what? That's it. I mean, I was born that way. So that's what fascinates me is people. I remember in the crib doing my Uncle Belnor with loose teeth. I can remember lying there thinking, oh, that's fascinating. It's so special. They won't stay in place, will they? And you know, it's just people are, and it's always. You know, at Bennington, I did all the students there mm-hmm. and any faculty members I could think of and all that. And they used to laugh. And, I got to do a lot of things at Bennington.
So with all of that said, what is it like for you then to hear people impersonate you?
I don't know who they're doing. I mean, it's a strange thing. I used to do Tallulah Bankhead, and she said, well, who's that? I don't know what you're talking about. You know, what could she be doing? She did. I have her in the book here. We had the same birthday. And we were both born at 8:30 at night, but she ignored the difference in the years. She said we were exactly the same age.
So you write about this in the book, but you went to Las Vegas, and how many people are doing you on the strip in Las
Seven
Vegas?
Seven men at the same time.
All guys.
All guys. And I thought, I must have some kind of glandular imbalance that nobody tells me about. You know, I mean, not one girl. But finally, Lucille Ball did me, Joe.
Oh, that's okay.
And that she's an attractive, pretty woman,
yes,
a feminine.
Yes.
I was thrilled to pieces. I was just thrilled. I mean, to be done by a woman. All these
didn't
guys
that involve
had
a police officer or something? Was it at the end or about it being? Am I wrong on that? At the end of the scene where she did you?
Yeah. You're right.
I seem to remember that.
I'll be darned. You remember that? I like that company, Lucille Ball.
Yes.
Oh, but yes, the police officer came to Lucy and she said, "Officer, I didn't mean any harm," was her line. And he said, "Harm? Look what you just did to Carol Channing, Julie." I like that.
So did you, while in Vegas, of course, you appeared in Vegas for a long time with George Burns, among other people.
Uh-huh.
What would you go see the people that would perform and do you?
Well, I went with George, and he laughed his head off. He said, "It's exactly like you, Carol. I can't see it. They all had 5 o'clock shadow. They all, they were, I mean, what is the matter? There's something wrong with me that no one dares tell me." That's what it is.
But it didn't hurt your feelings, I assume.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It means they must have, you know, if you want to turn into a person, I only did people that I worshipped.
Mm-hmm.
So Marlena Dietrich, you know, and the whole bunch, she didn't think that was too funny. It fell with a Teutonic thud on her ears.
We're listening to an archival episode of Vox Pop from 2003 with very special guest Carol Channing. The legendary performer died yesterday at the age of 97.
A lot to talk to you about, and we were talking a moment ago about Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Lorelei Lee, what a role.
Oh, that's monumental, isn't it? It's what all the rest of the world thought of Americans in the 20s. They thought we were charming, naive, childlike, cute, uneducated, manipulators, powerful, and gangsters all at the same time. That's what they thought of Americans. And Lorelei Lee personified, she was in one person, all mm-hmm. Americans to the rest of the world. It was Anita Luce's book, she wrote it, where she stood by me, she said, I want Carol. She said, there are two ways of doing it. You can get the prettiest, cutest, littlest girl in town, or get a comedian's comedy comment on the prettiest, littlest, cutest girl in town. So Anita Luce stuck by me, and she said, "No, I want Carol. See, I'm over 6 feet tall in heels, and I was supposed to be 5'2", eyes of blue." But it was a satire.
So it worked.
But it wasn't a mean satire.
Mm.
Never. I adored the character of Lorelei.
How long did you do that show for? Quite a while.
Oh, yes. And then we went 3 years on tour.
Mm. Do you still remember it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember the songs.
Yes.
By the way, I did do 13 shows on Broadway, but I was lucky enough to have two smash hits.
Two smashes.
Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful.
I mean, I'll never cease to be grateful for that. You can have one in a lifetime, but not two.
I was just curious of how, when you become that character and you do it for so long, and I would just think you would remember it forever.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
You never forget the lines.
Yes, no.
Yeah.
But Marilyn Monroe came to see it. You know, she did it in the movies.
She did.
Yes, she did. She came to see it, and 20th Century Fox brought her a seat in the third row center for 1 month. She came to every single show, matinee, evening show, everything. And she was so beautiful that for the first time, the orchestra couldn't look at Milt Rosenstock, the conductor. They just couldn't look. And he was Hitler. And they were scared of him, you know. And they couldn't look. And even Milt began to look at her. It was just amazing she was so beautiful.
What did you think of her taking over that role?
Well, I thought it was everything but funny. Which it was meant to be.
It was a satire.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
But she was nice. You obviously met her. Did you like Marilyn Monroe?
Yes. Well, you see, I had just heard that she was going to do my part.
Mm.
And I didn't know that when she came to the show. I was just embracing her. But she, you know, I could have kicked her down the stairs. It would. She doesn't realize. Didn't know that. She didn't know it. Once it's your baby, you know, you get covetous about it.
Now, this happened to you in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. It also happened to you in with Hello, Dolly and Barbara Streisand, of course. Why do you think you didn't make that switch? Why wouldn't they allow Carol Channing to be on film?
Honest to gosh, I don't know. Except I certainly don't look like Marilyn Monroe. I mean, I'm not like that. For heaven's sakes, nobody is. But Barbara Streisand, well, she's probably the greatest musical talent of our last century, as I say.
Well, and you say in the book that your perception of her is completely warped. Of Barbara Streisand.
Well, sure, she stole my baby.
Yeah. So you're friends now, though. You made up.
Yeah, we made up, and I'm glad. It was one Christmas. It was the happiest Christmas. We were at the Marvin Davises. You don't know them, but they give Christmas parties.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've never been invited, Carol.
Oh, you have?
But put in a good word.
And it's only for, if you can drop a name, that's who they invite. You know? So they invite, and somehow I got in on it. I'm not in on it anymore. What happened? Oh, I changed press agents. Their press agent used to be mine, and he won't invite me.
We're listening to an archival episode of Vox Pop from 2003 with very special guest, Carol Channing.
All right, we're going to go to the phones now, and we go to Seth now. Hi, Seth.
Hello. I actually worked very briefly with Carol back in the early 90s. I was at the William Morris Agency and had the pleasure of meeting her a few times.
Seth.
And I just needed, it was so many years ago, only a few times at some big events, so you wouldn't remember me.
But what's your last name, Seth?
Goldman. I used to work with Marty Klein. And that's a name you'd remember, I imagine.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
I do. Oh, I used to love to go to the William Morris office.
And I have to say, first of all, of all the millions of clients they had, you were absolutely one of the nicest, most wonderful people.
Really?
And I just adore you. In fact, I arranged my schedule today to be home to hear this broadcast when I heard you were going to be on.
Oh, Seth. Well, why didn't you come out and tell me that then? That's when I needed help.
I have an interesting story to tell you. Is that a friend of mine was a cousin of Tallulah Bankhead's.
Oh yeah.
And you always say that Tallulah never quite realized that you were doing when you were doing her that it didn't sound like her. Well, my friend swore that you were more Tallulah than Tallulah was half the time.
Your friend did.
Yeah, he said you were. It was absolutely spot on, amazing.
I'll be darned.
And he introduced me to a friend of yours, Cecilia Sisson, who, whenever I am depressed, I go put on my vinyl album that has that story, and I just break into grins, and the world just turns sunny again.
Oh, really? Oh, do you remember? Well, do you know about Cecilia?
Yeah.
Cecilia was a silent film star, and she couldn't bridge the gap from silent films to talkies, and she said it was studio politics. I'm trying to skip quickly. Is that right, Seth?
That's it.
Yeah, and she said it was the producer. I just wouldn't play ball with the producer, and she said so. Finally, she said, and I told him so in no uncertain terms. Now, when I watch all the old movies on TV, I say to myself, Cecilia, with your looks and talent, you could have been one of the greatest stars today if you'd only been able to keep your big mouth shut. I pinned that down fast, didn't I, Seth?
Thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
That was great.
Thank you, Seth.
I just want to, we're going to go back to the phones in a second. I want to mention a couple of names of the people that you worked with and that you write about in the book, and hope you can share some stories with them. First and foremost, we mentioned George Burns. I assume that you enjoyed working with George Burns.
He was a genius. He had dyslexia, so he had to go on animal instinct alone, and he never could read a book. Anyway, he was just great. To work with was heaven. I said, George, I never worked with anybody like you. I worked for 2 years with George in theaters across the country.
This was after Gracie died.
That's right. Mm. And he was just destitute. He went to her grave every day, but we went across the country, and I said, George, you are really happy when I get the laugh. I never worked with anyone like that. You just build me until I get the laugh. He said, you forget, Carol, I wrote your line. He wanted to get a laugh. That's George's laugh.
Joan Crawford, you sang at her wedding.
Yes.
And what happened?
I sang in French, and I didn't know what it meant. I just went to Audition Salabelle. Well, anyone who asked me to sing at her wedding deserves what she gets, don't you think? So, I mean, really, at a wedding? So she was getting married at Maxime's and heard I was going through Paris, and mm-hmm. she said, please come and sing to Alfred Steele, the CEO of PepsiCo. Mm-hmm. So... I went to Audition Salabelle, and I got this. I love that sound of French, rolling it around in your mouth, you know. I found a thing. I looked at the list of songs they had, and one said, Voulez-vous de la canne à sucre, which means, would you like some sugar cane? So I thought, that's an innocuous little thing to mm-hmm. sing it away. That'd be nice. Would you like some? So I learned it phonetically. And I just phonetically stood up, started singing, and do you know it embarrassed the French? Now, that's impossible. You can't embarrass the French. They got beat red, they got mad at me, and they walked out of Joan's wedding, and it was just, it was disaster. I ruined Joan Crawford's wedding. That's what I did.
She forgave you.
She was...
Sort of?
Well, no, she was tipping just a tad of... She used to drink just a little. A little more than Pepsi-Cola.
You write about Noel Coward in the book.
Oh, yes.
How did you get along with him?
I got along wonderfully. Well, he came backstage, and he encouraged me, and he told me the secret to an awful lot of things about getting along with an audience. Mm. And he was wonderful to me. Well, I adored him. I mean, why wouldn't I?
Mm. How about Ethel Merman?
Yes, we got along fine.
I'm sensing a hesitation.
Well, they wanted to get the sweeps. The sweeps are when television shows want to get the highest rating of the year.
For their advertising rates.
Yeah, what it is, isn't it? For their advertising rates.
Right.
That's it. So we won the sweeps for them, and why, I'll never know. It's the worst show that we ever did. It's just the worst. I adored her, and she knew it, and she asked, could we ride to work together? And she really didn't know how funny. Well, one of the things she said, yeah, I know there's a war on. I read Variety. Oh, she's heaven off stage. She doesn't know she's that funny. And her little girl said, Mommy, why do I have so many daddies? Because you're lucky.
Carol Channing is our guest this afternoon. We're going to go back to the phones and speak with Catherine in Albany, New York. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello, Catherine. Hello.
Oh, Carol Channing, I just love you. I've loved you since the first time I saw you, and I want to know your secret. How do you stay so young, so beautiful, so husky voice? You just knock everybody dead.
Oh, Catherine.
Oh, but you do.
Oh, are you about 100 years old? Did you think I'm so young?
My darling girl, I have 15 children, 28 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren, but I am young.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know. I guess if you keep working, are you really that young? Well, keep working.
Just keep going.
Yeah, that's right. Keep going, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, well, and it is, isn't it? It's keep moving, dancing, keep everything, right?
I come from Palm Springs, and that poor osteoporosis, that's where I have the osteoporosis club goes by my house every morning, and they've all retired, and that won't do. You mustn't do that, I don't think.
Well, I don't go out to the office to work anymore, but I can't really think of myself as retired with all that goes on in the family.
Catherine, thanks so much for the phone call.
Oh, Catherine, thank you.
We're going to move on now to Joel in Greenville. Hi, Joel.
Miss Channing.
Yes, Joel.
There was a record that I heard when I was a kid and kept listening to. It was a great joy to me. It was Archie and Mehitabel.
Oh, it's my fave. Mm. George Kleinsinger wrote the music and Joe Darian wrote the lyrics. Wasn't that wonderful?
It was.
It's taken from the, it's a newspaper man's favorite thing, Don Marcus, the Don, mm-hmm. Yes.
How did you get involved with that?
They wanted me, that's all I know.
Uh-huh.
They asked for me, and I was, isn't Mehitable the funniest thing you ever?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she's, and that dirty beat they had on that record, wasn't it wonderful?
The whole record just shimmered.
Do you think so? I think so, too. See, that's the music. It starts with the script and the music. That's mm-hmm. that's when all of a sudden the actor looks good.
Nah, well, it could only have been carried off by someone who had the spirit equal to it.
Spirit evil?
Equal.
Oh, equal. Oh.
You got scared for a second. Joel, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you, Joel.
Long life.
Thank you.
I was on the internet not long ago, and I was reading an editorial cartoon that I thought was just great, and it's by your son.
Yes, Chandler.
I didn't know that your son was an editorial cartoonist.
He was a Pulitzer Prize finalist a few years ago.
Channing Lowe.
Yeah, well, he goes by Chan Lowe. And people call in and say, why don't you go back to communist China where you came from? They do. They do. They think he's Chan L.O., I guess.
The South Florida Sun Sentinel is the paper that he works for.
That's right. How did you know?
Well, I saw his work. I saw some of the cartoons.
Oh.
Very, very fun. I assume, do you read his... Do you look at the cartoons all the time?
I get them every day.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
We're listening to an archival episode of Vox Pop from 2003 with very special guest, Carol Channing.
We go to Patricia now in Albany. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Miss Channing.
Hello, Patricia.
Oh, I just called to tell you how thrilled my little charges were. I minded my cousin's children when they were young, and they couldn't wait every day to get here so I could put on Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Oh, they liked that.
Oh, they were crazy. But in fact, there were some days when it would be two or three times during the course of the day they would ask if they could see that movie.
Oh, well, it was a good movie. George Roy Hill directed it, and Julie Andrews and Mary Tyler Moore, and we're all, the three of us are still close together.
Oh, they were wonderful, but it was your part at the end that the children just could not wait for.
What
they
did
just
you,
loved
at the
that.
End, they liked the end. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, at the biggest stage and coming in the plane.
Oh, the plane.
Oh, it was wonderful. Do and you, all your singing and dancing. You, oh, it was terrific.
I've got to tell you that Julie, we were in that plane together, Julie and I, and she had a strand of pearls on, and it was a World War I plane, and her pearls got caught in the ignition, in the key, in the ignition, and it went off for a minute, and I said, oh, my, Julie. And we grabbed one another, and the camera was behind us, and we just said, this is it. And we just grabbed each other as so tight, and Julie said, no, wait a minute, we've got to get it. We'll find it. Now, wait a minute, we'll find out where it is. Where is the key? Where is the ignition? And there was another plane behind us taking the pictures of us, and one in front taking pictures of us. Well, and we couldn't seem to yell to them, we've turned off the ignition. We kept going down. It was something. It really was. So I yelled, raspberries, thinking that would hold the scene together.
And see, that was what the children loved.
That was the line.
That you was their favorite expression all the time, was
raspberries.
Oh, well, Julie got the motor turned on again. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness is right. We would have hated to have seen anything happen.
We did. We would have hated it, too.
I'm sure you would.
Yes.
Patricia.
You're wonderful. I've really loved watching you through the years.
Oh, thank you.
Marvelous.
Thanks so much for the call.
I love hearing this. I like your program.
Well, thank you. We love having you here. As I read in the introduction, you were in Hello, Dolly! For like 4,500 performances.
No, darling, 5,000.
5,000?
No, wait, I say 5,000 because Yul Brynner. See, I keep dropping names. I can't help it. Those are the only people I know. Because if you're lucky enough to be in two smash hits, the traffic of the world goes through your dressing
room. That's
right. Yes. So Yul Brynner made me promise on his deathbed, he made me promise that I would. He played the king and I 5,000 times. He said, if you go over 5,000, don't tell anybody. I said, oh, Yul, I wouldn't think of telling anybody. But we did.
You did.
We went over 5,000. I don't want him to turn over in his grave. I don't want him to hear this.
Do you ever get, for a role that you've done 5,000 times, for you as an actress, what is that like? Do you ever get sick of it? Is it
never.
Are you ever on autopilot? Is it you just go out
God,
there?
That's the quickest way to empty a theater.
So how do you stay engaged?
I can't explain it to you, but there's just no problem. In the first place, you get nervous before each show. This mm-hmm. may be the audience that doesn't get it. They just don't think it's interesting, you know? And or funny or sad or anything. This may be the audience that doesn't respond at all. Mm. And then, there's no problem. It's like walking a tightrope. An audience is an X-ray machine. They know what you're thinking. They know, even with your back to the audience, by their response, I can tell that they know what I'm thinking. And if it crosses your mind for one split second, gee, I'm hungry, I think I'll have a hamburger, all of a sudden they didn't hear that line. They just didn't hear it. If I don't hear it, they don't hear it. If I don't feel it, they don't feel it.
And I assume to do that, you have to like what you do. I mean, you have to like the role. You have to be comfortable with the character.
Well, I was lucky. I never played anything I wasn't crazy about.
Right.
That's really fortunate.
What are you proudest of your accomplishments?
Proudest of?
Mm.
Archie and Mehitable. and that. And, in Boston, we got to play Sugar Babies.
Mm.
Annie Miller came up and taught me her tap dance. 4 steps. She's not in this part of the country, but there are 4 steps, same 4 steps in everything she does. It's wonderful. It's so easy to learn them. And so I did the same 4 steps and then whipped off my skirt like she did. Isn't she great?
She is great.
She's just great. Well, anyway, so in Boston, it was, they all said, the critics all said, Kevin Kelly and everybody, it's just great in Boston. Come to Boston to see Sugar Babies. Well, it was a bunch of old burlesque comics yelling and screaming their heads off. I loved that part. I did a thing with doves where they flew to me. I had a flesh-colored bodysuit, so people thought I was just standing there like September Morn in a Norman Rockwell calendar, you know, in front of a waterfall and the usual old stuff at the turn of the century. And the doves flew in and flew here, here, and there to cover me up auspiciously. You see, Nelson was down here, and little Jeanette was here, and they all had names. And then I put my arms out, and then they all flew, and they went on my arms. And Nelson was the craziest dove of all. There was a bald-headed man in the third row center, I'll never forget. And the thought, well, he was little, no, he was on the aisle. And Nelson suddenly flew away, and the audience went, oh, because they thought I didn't have anything on. And they flew away and perched himself on the bald man's head. Well, it got such a laugh, they had to pull the curtain down, and they used that for an ending. We had to hire any bald-headed man to sit there forever after at that. And everybody said, oh, God, it's the funniest show I ever saw. I had the best parts. I was a waitress in a diner, and the girl comes in, the ingenue and the leading man, they came in. She sits down at a table, and they say, she said, I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. And I enter and say, well, you came to the right place. All these tough broads I was doing. It was wonderful. I loved it.
We're going to go back to the phones in the remaining moments with Carol Channing. We go to Sally in Saratoga. Hi, Sally.
Good afternoon to both of you and Miss Channing. I certainly do think that you are a treasure.
Oh, thank you.
And I remember many years ago, I won't say how many, but you were in Baltimore, and you were on the radio station at WBAL, and I happened to be in the audience, and you were throwing the pretend diamonds all over Kingdom Come. And I still have that little treasure.
Throwing them out?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I did throw out diamonds. That's true.
Yes, diamonds were a girl's best friend.
And you got one?
I got one.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I still have it.
I'm so pleased. I'm so pleased
now,
you got
me,
it.
You still look the same, but I don't. I look like a prune now with all the wrinkles. What have you done to yourself, or who is your doctor? And if you want to tell me, I'll be happy to take his name. You can give it to someone at the studio there, and I'll be glad to call back and get it.
You mean you don't see the bags under my eyes?
And of course not. You don't have bags under your
eyes. Yes, I do.
And you don't have any wrinkles either.
Yes, I do. There's two slashes. I look like Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, come along.
Yes, you do not.
I do just see here and here. Look at what is that if it isn't a wrinkle.
But you still don't look like a prune, and I do.
Oh, you do?
How about that? And, of course, at that time, my hair was pitch black. Now I'm white as a marshmallow.
It helps.
Very nice.
Don't you think it's nice to have white hair?
Yes,
I have it, too.
Yes, I do. I hated to put that black gook on my face. When my husband was alive, he said, don't ever let your hair get white. And I didn't. But now that he's been gone for 6 years, I don't think he's going to mind.
I don't think, no.
How about
but
that?
I bet he knows about it.
I don't know.
I bet he does.
I won't know till I get up there at 84. I don't know how much longer it will be.
Oh, you're 84.
Yes.
I'm 82.
Well, God bless your little old heart. How about that? Then you have to say, ma'am, to me.
Oh,
how about that?
No,
and if you were around closer here, if you were going to stay longer, I'd invite you over for some chicken soup and matzo balls. And wouldn't you like that?
Oh, I'd love that.
How about that?
But really, every woman thinks she looks like a prude, dear. You mustn't think you do.
No, I'm only teasing. No, I don't look like a prune.
No, good.
But the wrinkles are there.
Yeah, me too.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, have a lovely day and do drive safely.
Sally, thank you so much for this.
And invite me to your wedding.
Oh, do come.
I'd love to have that.
Are you marrying in Palm Springs or
no,
in New York?
No, it's going to be in Modesto, California.
Oh, wow.
Well, Harry was the mayor there. Yes, and he spoke in legislature Saturday. Yes, he did about things he once done. What he once done is pornography on television, you know, on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Children don't know what that is. I remember Chan, my son, when Chan was little, they don't know what that is, but they figure, well, I guess that's what we're supposed to do. It's terrible.
It is.
Those poor children, and so he's after trying to get that off, you know,
off the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
We just have about 2 minutes left, but. What is next for you? You've accomplished so much. The book is out. You're getting married. What else do you want to do? What else is out there that you want to accomplish?
Well, Harry's wonderful. He says, I want you to fly, Carol. I'm going to let her fly. But he said, if she does fall, I'll be there to catch her. Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful.
Yes. What I want to do is a show I've never done, and I've always wanted to do it, and I've never done anything that I have in mind to do in it. The only thing is, if I talk about it, I'll never do it. That's what I'm like. I noticed that the only person I saw when I was writing the book was the garbage collector, and if I said, do you think this is a good idea, and then I'd tell him about it, then I never wrote it. You either talk about something or you do it, or at least I do.
Mm-hmm. So there is a role out there. You would go back on stage. You
would. I'm going.
You're going.
Yes.
So you don't believe in slowing down at all? That is no interest to you at all?
Well, why should I slow down?
There's no reason you should.
No.
No.
No, I don't think so. I mean, thank goodness, I mean, I feel better than I ever did in my life. And I think that happens, probably Sally does too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that happens to a lot of people as they get older. You sort of grow out of mumps, measles, and all those childhood diseases. I got everything when I was in Hello, Dolly, everything.
The name of Carol Channing's book is Just Lucky, I Guess, a memoir of sorts. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Carol Channing, what a pleasure to have you here. It's just been a thrill.
Oh, Joe, I do like your program. I like you and all your listeners.
Well, thank you so much. For a delightful hour, I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Chez Sophie Bistro, serving contemporary and classic French cuisine using fresh game meats and imported French cheeses, French wines, and beers since 1969, ChezSophie.com, and Needleworks, Greenwich, New York, yarns for a hand-knitting with personal... Do you want to read it?
Well, you seem to stumble over a few
things. Here, you just read that last one, Needleworks.
Needleworks, box, close, CO1...
Yeah.
Okay, Needleworks, Greenwich...
New York.
What do you mean Greenwich, New York?
Yeah, it's great. It's not Greenwich here. It's Greenwich.
Oh,
yeah.
Honestly?
Yeah, just go with it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah, yarns for hand knitting with personal instruction and classes. What? Yarns for hand knitting.
Yes.
Who wants to sit and hand knit?
NPR is next. Thanks for joining us. Carol, you're great. Thanks so much.
Oh, no. Your sponsor is going to be mad at
you.
That was an archival episode of Vox Pop with very special guest, Carol Channing. The legendary performer died yesterday at the age of 97. To find the link to share or listen again, visit WAMC.org/roundtable.